Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Did you get any prescribed medication, sir?
Listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.
That you would be indeed.
You are. That was supposed
October
to be.
October 22nd. Who was that?
That was supposed to be Judge. Well, it was Judge Judy, but it didn't play properly. It was supposed to be this.
Did you take any prescribed medication, sir?
But it didn't play.
I think she's addressing that question to you.
Yes, she was. She was. But, you know, when something doesn't go right, I just can't deceive people, Michael. I can't just pretend it was supposed to happen. What do they
know.
Say in the theater? If you make a mistake,
just
make
move
it big.
On. Yeah, yeah.
Make it big.
Yeah,
and I'm the king of making it big.
There
of course. I didn't get in this business to make a lot of money, and so far that's working out real well for me.
Has to be something to be said about that,
yes.
Right?
We would like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Most prominent listing sources. We got to change the phrasing on that. That just strikes me as a little odd, don't you think? Internet's most prominent?
I said one of the most prominent.
One of the most prominent. No, yeah. But more acclaimed. You know, something. We got to talk to him about that. That
could
be updated. I know this is exactly the time
today.
For us to discuss this, isn't it? Annie is based on Harold Gray's popular comic strip, Little Orphan Annie. Comic strip premiered in the 1920s in the New York Daily News and became one of the most widely read strips in the 30s and 40s. Lyricist director Martin Sharnin bought a coffee table, but I love this tale. This was on their website. Bought in under fun facts, and they are indeed. Bought a coffee table book called The Life and Hard Times of Little Orphan Annie as a Christmas gift for a friend in 1970. Clerk at the bookstore was too busy to wrap the book, so Sharnin took the book home to wrap it. Instead, he read it, fell in love with the strip, and set out to secure the rights Christmas week of 1970.
Well, Mr. Sharnin's friend never got the book, but after presenting the idea to colleagues, Charles Strauss, a two-time Tony-winning composer, and Thomas Meehan, a short story writer for The New Yorker, the team was finally formed in 1971 when they began to write the now legendary musical, Annie. Today we are joined by two of the stars of a brand new incarnation of this iconic piece of American theater. Please welcome Gilgamesh Taggart and Lynn Andrews.
There they are.
Oh, stop.
Hello.
Don't you love the way they stop on cue like that?
That's amazing.
Yeah. They're really
very well-trained non-studio audience.
Yeah. How are you? Good to have both of you.
Welcome to State
of the
Arts.
Appreciate having you on the show and all that. And
absolutely.
To talk about this.
Before we talk to our guest, how was your week? Because I really haven't seen you for a week. We took a week off last week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been going good. Monica's been back and forth to Chicago. My lovely wife, Monica, dealing with some unfortunate family issues there, but we're trying to make the best of it. And I'm in rehearsal for this thing that is playing just this weekend. Called The Bard and the Beatles at the Hillcrest Performing Arts Center.
Shakespearean. I'm sorry. Please repeat that.
The Bard and the Beatles. Yes. It's
okay.
Shakespearean.
Right.
It's a stage reading of Shakespearean monologues and scenes, and they're interspersed with Beatles songs that are similar in theme or nature.
Oh.
So it's pretty wonderfully
interesting concept.
Odd.
I feel like my understudy's going to go on this weekend.
It's very,
I may have to see that.
I'm doing Shylock from Merchant of Venice, which is immediately followed by Come Together from Abbey Road. So I do the Hath Not a Jew Eyes speech immediately followed by Come Together.
Oh, my God.
And there's some really weird... Some of it is tremendously odd, and some of it just like, you're really stretching getting that to fit. But then others are just like a perfect continuation of the speech, it sounds like. You know, just like the same... I mean, obviously not the iambic pentameter or whatnot.
Right.
But it's just very sort of unusual and kind of quirky, and it's very casual stage reading. doing, you know, music stands and open good. Books
That's
and all that.
That's kind of cool. I like yeah. that. Now, Hillcrest.
And all nude, if I didn't mention that.
Oh,
it's a nude
well.
Thing.
Yeah. And
yeah.
how are ticket sales?
Well, a, in a minute, they're going to be really great after that announcement.
Ticket sales are shriveling.
Oh, we've got one of those kind of guests.
Well, the air, yes, yeah. the air conditioning. They put the air conditioning on there. It's just and how
that's out in lovely Thousand Oaks.
How yes, in yeah, Thousand. Yes. And how was your week, Michael?
Good. Just amping up for LA's Next Great Stage Star, which is a musical theater competition like no other here in Los Angeles and or the West Coast, quite frankly. And we're coming into a 10-year anniversary, and it's basically a launching pad for young. Artists who are in the live musical, the business of live musical theater, or would like to be in the business of it. Yeah. And we have proudly 14 of our contestants have already made their Broadway debuts. And
What year is this, Michael?
10
years. This is your 10th anniversary.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing thing. I'll puff up Michael's skirt for him on this one, but it's puff up. Is that I'm mixing my metaphors there?
I think we're mixing up genders. I'm not sure.
But it is a very attractive skirt, I just want to say. And few men can pull it off as well as you.
Oh, gosh.
It's a very encouraging, though. A competition show, but not like some of the Drek that's on television where it's just like really clashy. It's very encouraging, and they're phenomenal, really talented young people.
They are, indeed. And over 80 of our contestants through the years are now professionally working in theater and U.S. national tours.
That's fantastic.
Vegas sit-downs. And yeah, it's very exciting because it's kind of patterned after Idol, but it's...
Including one of the shows that we're going to be talking about on our break here, Damn Yankees, Travis Leland, who plays the lead of Joe Hardy.
Yes,
this
indeed.
Is one of your...
Yes, and a remarkable debut on the theater stage. So, thank you for asking that.
Good.
So we should probably get into this, right?
Why don't you introduce this gentleman to your left, Michael?
Indeed. The world's best love musical returns in time-honored form, directed by original lyricist and director Martin Sharnan, and choreographed by Liza Gennaro. This production of Annie is a new take on a treasured classic, featuring book and score by Tony Award winners Thomas Meehan, Charles Strauss, and Martin Sharnan. Annie includes such unforgettable songs as It's the Hard Knock Life, Easy Street, I Don't Need Anything But You, plus the eternal anthem of optimism, Tomorrow.
Our first guest is thrilled to reprise the role of Daddy Warbucks after two seasons in Cleveland. I don't really know what that means. I'm going to ask you about that, but it sounds like it sounds like that old joke. You know, first prize is a week in Cleveland. Second prize is 2 weeks in Cleveland.
I knew it was going to start.
His other favorite roles include Father and Children of Eden, which Cabrillo is actually doing next season.
Yes, I know.
A rarely performed piece. Mm-hmm. Franz Liebkin and the Producers, Billy Flynn in Chicago, and Judd Fry in Oklahoma. Please welcome Gilgamesh Taggart.
There they are.
Mr. Taggart, how are you?
Sir?
I'm very well. Yourselves this morning?
Yeah, we're good.
Or this afternoon. It's morning. It's crack of noon for an actor.
It's afternoon. So you have, after 2 weeks in Cleveland, it was just sort of this isolated thing in your bio.
2 years.
Oh, it was 2 years in Cleveland?
Yes. Does it say 2 weeks?
I don't know.
Wow, I may have poorly written my bio.
Did I, after two seasons, I'm sorry, it says two seasons.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, we did it for a couple of years at Christmas time in Cleveland at Beck Center for the Arts. Uh-huh. I've worked, basically the last 10, 12 years of my theater career was done in Cleveland while I was teaching there.
Oh, okay. All right. And you seem like, I'm sure you are in the show, obviously, because of your talent, but you seem genetically engineered to play Daddy Warbucks.
Oh, I don't know about genetically. I'll give, Schick or Gillette, either of them, credit for it as well. I actually used to sport hair down the middle of my back and a big beard.
Sport hair down the middle of your back.
All the way down.
Because I'm Italian.
That's common.
I've had hair on my back since I was 14.
Hence why lawnmowers were invented. But I had long, long, long hair, rock and roll hair. I looked like Meatloaf when I was young.
Did you?
Years back. And then Great Lakes Theater Festival, a wonderful Equity House in Cleveland, wanted me to play a professional wrestler in As You Like It. Wow. And I said, that's great. I've got the hair. I'll just shave the goatee down to something weird. And they said, no, we want you to shave your head. And at that point, like I said, it was literally down to just about 4 inches above my belt line.
Wow.
And went from that to this. And after a couple of days of therapy, it was traumatic, I won't lie. But I liked it. I liked the look. So
it's a look. It looks good on you, too. There are people that just who don't have, and it's odd to say, but just people who don't have, can't pull it off. Can't pull the look
Let me ask you a question about this, too, just man to man. Because when I see people that you know, you wear that well, that look well. But you said you take a razor to it?
Yes.
How is it that your skin is so beautiful on the top of your head? Seriously.
It's going to be that kind of show.
You guys want a moment or something?
No, I mean, anybody I see that has shaved their head has this spectacular skin.
It's well, part of it is if you're going to shave any area repeatedly, it's just like when people treat their face. You want to keep the skin soft.
You're just taking off those dead cells.
I take good care of it. I try and straight razor shave it when I can, just as a treat to myself to get it done either or do it myself. Mm-hmm. But it's just caring for the skin and making sure that, anytime you're just dragging blades across any area of skin, if you're going to do it every day, which I do, then there's just little, you lose lotions and things, and make sure any young man listening to this show, if you're going to shave any part of your body, please use shaving cream.
Yes.
Just learn, because my dad was one of those, cold water and just drag a rusty tuna can lid across your face.
No.
Now
he looks like Jack Palance.
Exactly. if you want to look 50 at 20, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's taking care of yourself. It's the skin is just like your voice, just like your legs when you dance, or your instrument.
Speaking of voice, he has a magnificent voice.
Yeah. Well, I used to work in radio, so that helped. Stop it.
It's funny you mentioned.
That's three compliments, and at that point, Lynn's got to jump in and smack me down. I'm just saying.
I just really think that it's great that Lynn, who also shaves her head and actually just wears this wig for the show.
It's magnificent. Is
it a kinship thing that they do?
Absolutely. You wouldn't believe the tattoo work she has done on her temples as well. Fantastic.
I have the best idea for a tattoo, and I'm still going to do it. I want to have a tattoo up my back of my height at different ages.
That's funny.
Like a door jam, Like Paul at 12. Would that be great?
That's fantastic.
You know,
it's very meta.
This is a friend of mine who has sadly passed away a few years ago, but I worked with him in Connecticut, and he's an actor who his career completely changed. He was a professional wrestler and then became an actor, and when he shaved his head, his career completely changed. His name was Erland Van Lith de Jude, and he played in a movie called Stir Crazy with Richard Pryor.
Yes.
And
is he the one who stretches
Gene Wilder?
Gene Wilder in the cell?
Okay. That's Erland Van Lith de Jude, and he was in his big change was Fordham Baldies, because he was in The Wanderers.
Oh.
And then he had to shave to be one of the Fordham Baldies, the one of these street gangs from the 50s. Who knew that in talking about Annie, it would be about shaved heads and exfoliation. So
Annie is a conversational nexus.
Yes.
That's how it works.
Well, here was the other part of that, what I was leading up to, was if I don't think I've ever seen Annie done with anybody that hasn't had a shaved head. And I've always wondered what it would look like, or if it's something that just would spoil that character because it's
a lot
so
of
famous.
Community theaters have done it. You'll see online there'll be pictures of some very absolutely wonderfully awful bald caps. as far as the character, if you read the story, and I had a gentleman who toured with Martin's Annie years back, Leslie Fagan. He played FDR, and he is now settled in Cleveland and does a lot of work there. He ended up getting me a giant compilation book of Annie because, of course, he's obsessed with all things Annie, as apparently everybody does this show does, except for Lynn.
You're right, though.
Fair enough.
You're
right. But and going through it, I was amazed. First of all, I only knew the story based on this show, or I was introduced to it via the movie until last year when I tricked my knee out. I'd never seen the show. I hate to admit that, but I'd only seen it from the inside. And then going back and reading this book now, there was a lot of amazing... That was a crazy cartoon or comic strip.
Yeah.
A lot of things happened. He was in a wheelchair for a while. He grew a great big bushy beard for a while. I was like, what is going on? It's fantastic, but it always the bald head, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's so... And it does make the character so iconic and easily recognizable.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's just like... I mean, if they could, they'd take Annie's pupils out just so they could have that sort of,
Just to keep the look going.
Just to keep the look going. Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's talk about their production now, because this is a fresh new, regenerative production that is touring the country. And have you been on tour since when have you been on tour?
13 months.
Yeah. 13 no, months already?
Yeah.
And you're signed up for how many more months?
Until May, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Until May.
That's right.
Wow.
And this is a nice sit-down for them, you were saying, before we went on the air. It's nice to sort of be in one place for more than a couple of nights.
Yeah.
You know?
It's great to be in L.A. In L.A. Out there. It's lovely.
Yeah, have you gotten down to the beach yet or anything?
No.
You should.
Gosh, no. I sleep all day.
Really? I go sleep at the beach.
But it's outside. There's sand.
My goodness.
There's people.
There's sand. There's people.
There's water.
You gotta walk around.
You gotta walk on your hind legs. I can't be bothered with that.
You know, when those first rays of sunlight hit the lid of my coffin, it's really awful.
Garlic and
No, but see, this is the field to be in. I mean, I saw this interview with this great comedian, Brian Regan, and his whole thing was the whole reason he became a comic. He's like, I don't have to be there until 8 o'clock at night.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is a job I could make it to on time. That was his whole decision on that.
I mean, it is nice to be out here, and it is great. The weather's fantastic, but we're in a play that's in 1933 in the winter.
Yeah.
During the Great Depression.
A lot of
coats.
Yeah. A lot of layers.
Yeah.
And that's... I'm just going to say, is it something that you ever imagined yourself to play at any point in time? Because you said you've never seen the production.
I've known of the production. Yeah. I've had my career's taken different turns at different points of what. If somebody, though, even just 5 or 7 years ago, had sat me down and said, okay, you're going to play, I'm not insulting the character, but he's a rather stiff, he's a rather focused and non-bizarre character, because I did a good deal of strange.
He's square, dude.
He's square. Yeah, he's square. He's a square. If somebody had told me you were going to play one of the biggest squares in theater history and then represent this love for a child, I'd have been like, yeah, you're out of your mind. You know, and we were in the process of working on Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the musical. So are things like that where you're like, no.
So right along the same line.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's
going to the same bag of tricks there, Gilgamesh.
And it was also the, you know, I was never the face growing up. I was always the character actor. And that's been throughout my entire career. I've really enjoyed playing the weird or out there or strange or different character roles. And to be thrust into a principal, especially this iconic of one, was so outside of my bailiwick, I wasn't even considering it. But when it was first offered, I was excited by the opportunity, ran with it. And then fortunately, after 2 years of doing it in Cleveland, came out and met Mr. Sharnan and the production cast and got lucky.
Wow. No. Well, they're not, you know, the lucky thing is sort of like, you know, I love the old adage. I find it that the harder I work, the luckier I get.
True.
You know?
My dad used to say that luck is opportunity showing up, but you just happen to be doing what you want to do.
Yeah. You know, what did Robert Evans say? Luck is where luck is at the intersection of opportunity and preparation.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which I always loved.
Robert Evans,
God,
the film
I wish
producer.
I knew how to read.
Robert Evans, the film producer. Yeah.
He said that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's in his book.
Oh,
the Kid Stays in the Picture.
Know that he was that astute.
Oh, my.
So, well,
what he did to his wife.
He might have had a ghostwriter, you know.
Excuse me.
No, he was
poor Ally McGraw, if you're out there listening.
Oh, hey, she was not blameless in that little breakup. That'll be a whole nother show. We're not going to go there. Let's stay with these folks.
I was going to say we're dishing. This is fun.
Did you?
What happened?
Now, this is sort of for both of you. What does it say, Kayla, on your Starbucks?
Well, it says Michaela, because she's the kind lady that got me my Starbucks.
Oh, okay.
Hey, girl.
Just like,
how you doing?
Oh, okay.
Well, you don't think she goes into a Starbucks by herself, do you? Oh, my God. She'd be
mobbed. I don't actually go into the Starbucks ever.
That would mean leaving your hotel room.
I use one of my staffers.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Interacting with the public is not in her concert.
It's true.
She shows up for the radio show and she just hands me something. Read this.
I
pre-recorded my responses. Just click wherever.
This is what I sound like if you want to fake it. On the air. Oh, it's priceless.
Oh, now, Judge Judy must have something to say
for
about this thing.
For both of you. Now that didn't go. Oh, yeah. But just, no. I'm just right there.
The timing on the show is impeccable.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a pro. But anyway, now here's the thing, and it sounds like a trite question, and it might be a trite question, but it's for both of you. But, you know, when you go in, when you take a role on, and you obviously want to do your preparation, and you have all of the usual performance angst attached to just doing a good job, and then you have something like this. Annie, you have probably one of the most loved musicals. What does that throw on your plate in terms of responsibility, emotional responsibility? Was it a factor for you in preparation, or like knowing that people had such a history about this? Does it affect your preparation, or is it best not to think about that and only pursue it like any other character?
Well, when I got cast, I made sure not to watch any of the movies or do any research like that, because people, if they, for instance, the movie from the 80s, people love that movie, and they love Carol Burnett. And no matter what I do, I'm not going to be her. So I'm not even going to try to do anything like her. Right. So, you know, I think I thought I would feel all this pressure from the other women who had done the role before, but I actually didn't, because it was like, I simply do not care. I simply just have to play the moments as truthfully as I can, and that's all that's all you can do.
Right.
I mean, I can torture myself, but I'll do that another way.
For sure. I'll torture myself in other ways, like having to go to the Starbucks on my own.
Having to see daylight.
Oh, my God. Go out without my entourage? Are you kidding me?
And who is your entourage?
Who is my entourage?
You didn't see them all outside? There's a bus.
Oh, that's the entourage.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. They're right here.
I have no entourage. There they are.
Yes.
Thank you, Minnie. Thank you, peasants.
Sorry. Left of the cake. And what about you, Gilgamesh, in terms of your prep?
I think Lynn said it best. It's I've been asked that question before, and I'm grateful to the movie, the 84 movie, because it introduced me to Albert Finney, which made me go back and watch movies he'd done previous. And I think Victor Garber and, I mean, Reed Shelton and the original, everybody that's done it has really just tried to tell their own truth with the character. You know, you play the play, the lines are there, we have the man who created it, so we have received any inside information we're going to get is going to come from him.
Right.
So we just try and find the truth of the character and be as honest as we can.
Yeah. How blessed you are to be working with the creator.
Being yelled at by a legend is amazing.
You know.
It's so satisfying.
You know, my friend Ted did, Ted Koch, who we've had his wife Lena on the show.
Yeah.
And my friend Ted, about 15 years ago, did the Brian Dennehy revival of Death of a Salesman on Broadway.
Yes.
And they had Arthur Miller.
Yeah.
And he's rewriting it. He's like making revisions to it. It's like, it's the greatest play in history. It's like, no, shorten that line. It's just like, oh, no pressure.
Something like that
going on.
Because
he's been thinking about it for decades.
Yeah. I finally hate that.
And it wasn't, and the thing, that was my first question for Ted, was it's not being tweaked to make it more topical or to change verbiage for a modern audience. It stayed in that sort of music.
Yes.
It just was things he didn't like about it.
Same thing has happened with this, actually. There are ideas that Martin has always wanted to see have happen.
Yeah.
There are beats that he's always wanted to see accomplished, and not just because they worked 30 years ago, but because he really wants to make the show as good as it can be. And there have been tons of little, just even one word in a sentence have been changed. Or it says it's an all original production, the one we're doing. He's actually taking the show really back to the truth of the heart of it. And it's created some changes. Like people who are familiar with the song NYC, there's some brand new Martin Sharnan lyrics written for the show.
Okay.
Which is very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's fantastic that there's this whole new aspect from the creator brought out to the audience.
But it sounds like the tweaking is surgical, like rather than in big broad strokes.
Very much so.
Okay.
Did he ever express his opinion about the current Annie or the most current Annie film that was
no
just
comment.
Out? Yeah. I would imagine so.
That would be for him to say.
His opinion isn't hard to find.
Yeah, there's this. I don't know if you're aware. There's this thing called the intranet, and
the worldwide net. I've heard about this.
My friend Google. She knows everything.
Yes.
Disaster.
She knows everything. But it was, you know, and he's, I mean, they're always looking, obviously every director is going to see what another director will do with their piece, or when you create something, you want to, you don't want to always be the first person to put it out when you workshop it. It's sometimes better to get away from it, let somebody else take their hand at it. And if for no other reason than to sometimes see what you have in mind that doesn't work, or what they had in mind that doesn't work, you can learn as much from what doesn't work as much as you can what does.
Right, right, right. So, well, you learn more. You yes. learn more from your mistakes than you do from your successes, because that's what challenges you. You know, yeah. I mean, I've always found that to be.
In my old theater class, I used to say to my students, I would say, there's no such thing as mistakes. There's only discoveries. Even if that discovery is, wow, is that a bad idea?
Yeah. So. No, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. I'm writing that shit down.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Trademark Gilgamesh, tag it. Yeah. Not what he's writing down, what he just
hashtag
said.
Hashtag stolen quotes. Okay. Is that what the kids say now? Hashtag.
That's what they say.
We should do our arts calendar, Michael.
We
and then
should.
We should talk to this lovely lady to my right.
Absolutely.
We've been sitting here so patiently. You want to kick it off?
I will, indeed. Right. And we'll talk about the shows that we saw, too, at the end of this. International City Theater winds up its 30th anniversary season with an intimate portrait of musical icon Stephen Sondheim in his own words and music. DJ Gray directs and stages the Los Angeles premiere of James Lapine's award-winning Broadway hit Sondheim on Sondheim. Writing songs that reflect the complexity of his characters, Stephen Sondheim changed the way we define a great musical. Yet, even though millions of fans know his songs by heart, few know much about Sondheim himself. Until now, conceived by frequent Sondheim collaborator James Lapine, this intimate evening combines exclusive interview footage offering an inside look at Sondheim's personal life and artistic process with sparkling new arrangements of over two dozen Sondheim tunes ranging from the celebrated to the obscure.
Director DJ Gray, who assisted Lapine on the Broadway production, says, in addition to the well-known songs, there are some that are more obscure and some that ended up being cut altogether from his musicals. It's fascinating to hear Stephen speak frankly about why those didn't work. He's candid, funny, and charming. It's a unique window into how he works and what shaped him as an artist. Sondheim on Sondheim runs through November 8th at the International City Theater, located in the Long Beach Performing Arts Center, 300 East Ocean Boulevard in Long Beach. For reservations and info, call the box office 562-436-4610.
Now, I said Lapine. You said Lapine.
Let's call the whole thing off.
There you go. No, I believe it is Lapine. Am I correct?
I think you're right. It's Lapine.
It's Lapine?
It's Lapine. Yeah.
And I said Lapine?
You did indeed.
Okay. Well, the emphasis on the wrong syllable, as they say.
So we have both seen theater.
I saw Damn Yankees.
Yes.
And... I haven't had a good spit take in here.
I almost Danny Thomas'd all over
Lynn. That's a personal best right there.
Oh, I tell you.
That was a great one. Anyway, Damn Yankees at Cabrillo Music Theater, an absolute hoot. Saw it this weekend with my nephew, who's 13. My wife and I have 20 nieces and nephews, and whenever any one of them turns 13, they get a trip to California as a gift from us, and they're carried around on a velvet pillow for like 3 days. They love it, or 4 days. So Tristan was this trip, and we brought him in to see Damn Yankees, and he's from Utah. And they see a lot of musical theater in Utah.
There's a great deal of musical theater in Utah.
So he was a bit persnickety. He was very particular about what he...
Really?
And he was bowled over. He absolutely loved it. He was so excited about it that we went back home and we were watching like musical theater stuff on YouTube all night. Obviously, the two people that we had on our show, they were just so wonderful. Rene Marino and Travis Leland, who we mentioned earlier, who played Lola, and Joe Hardy. Both just triple threat.
Yes.
Forces in nature there.
You know Rene Marino? Do you know her?
No.
Rene
no.
Marino is, she, of course, in this show, she played Lola. And in the motion picture, Jersey Boys, she played Mary Delgado, a role that she had done on Broadway, as well as the national tour in Vegas and so forth. She didn't create the role on Broadway, but she did it in the motion picture opposite Jennifer Lord Young.
Just a spitfire.
Her first time ever in a musical theater production here in California.
Yeah.
She's not from
California. And perfect for Lola in this.
Spectacular.
And they're getting so many accolades, and they're all well deserved. But there's a young lady who plays Gloria Thorpe.
Yes.
Catherine Penny.
Yeah.
And I just really want to call her out because in a role like this where Lola is so prominent and, you know, just as far as the structure of the show goes, the Gloria character can get a little lost. She's got that great first number. And Catherine Penny keeps that from happening. She's wonderful. I'm looking at her bio and it says she's just out of UCLA and this is a performer to watch. She was
absolutely
just wonderful. And just across the board, Cabrillo does incredible stuff there, and that whole Broadway in your backyard thing, it's really the case. It's just the highest, some of the highest quality theater you can see in Southern California, the beautiful Fred Kavli Theater, and can't recommend it high enough.
And we can't leave out the extraordinary John Sloman.
John Sloman, yes.
Mr. Applegate.
Yes.
Also from Broadway, always delivers a fine performance and is a hell of a singer. Really.
Yes, and you saw this one as well.
I saw it the day before.
Oh, that's right. You were there on Saturday. Yeah. I was there on Sunday. But you saw something else, too, didn't you?
I did. I saw The Sound of Music, which is on its national tour at the Amundsen Theater. And this, too, like Annie, is a new incarnation of the production. And I think it's important for anyone who has children to make sure that, you know, of a certain age, that they come and see a show like this because it is just as iconic as Annie is and something that I think will give a new perspective to children on behavior and also just, you know, love and so forth and relationships in a family situation.
Proving once again that the family that sings together often has to flee the Alps with Nazis on their hill.
You are so disrespectful.
Wow. I think you just summed up the show.
They steered clear of that whole Nazi theme in Annie. Mm-hmm. They were going to go with that, but they say, but they didn't go that route, which I think really was a boon to the show.
So they just gave it to The Sound of Music. Yeah. But no, seriously.
But that's an important thing to talk about, though, between Sound of Music and Annie. The number of shows that are family-friendly shows that you can, musicals, that you can bring people to is really diminishing. There's not.
It is, which is why this is important. You know, it's a generational show. And what do they say even for theater? You know, they say if you own a theater and your theater's having problems and you're not making money, pull out The Sound of Music or pull out Annie.
Oklahoma.
Troubles will be over.
Hedwig.
Yeah. Ah, wow. But here's my point about this this lovely show at the Amundsen. And people, you should go see it, especially if you haven't seen it or if your children have never seen it. It was touted as being a really different kind of take on it. And to me, as someone who's actually directed this as well, it was none of those things. It was still the same show. It may have looked prettier because of the sets, which were actually very beautiful. But the performances are what sells this show. Now, but I must say, not in total. Hmm. I felt that there was a lack of connection between this young, beautiful young lady who is playing Maria, and she has been discovered by the director, Jack O'Brien, and that is Kirsten Anderson. Beautiful voice. She's just not old. She's 20 years old. She's just not old enough to have the experience that she's singing about.
And reads as young,
certainly the gentleman who plays the captain, Captain Von Trapp, Ben Davis, he is marvelous in his role, but he has nothing to play off of. So there's a huge lack of chemistry between the two of them.
And he's 14, right?
Oh, and Ashley Brown is in this show, who created the role of Mary Poppins on Broadway.
Oh, really?
And is now the Mother Abbess.
Oh, wow.
Not meaning because it's
nice
years later.
To history
it's just
there.
That she is Jack's take on this was to have a younger woman in this role so that it was more relatable for the character of Maria.
Right.
I disagree with that. It had nothing to do with it. It didn't make it any different. And I mean, Ashley is an amazing singer, and she does the role well, you know. And of course, when you close an act with Climb Every Mountain, how do you go wrong with that? It is what it is. But all in all, it's a lovely production. It's not just it's just what it's always been. It's just, as I said, prettier, and it's got it's not as dynamic as I think it could be.
Okay.
but definitely worth seeing.
All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All right. Good enough. Michael, would you introduce this young lady to my right?
And may I just finish saying it's at the Amundsen Theater through October 31st, and tickets are available online at centertheater.org.
Oh, and you know what, Michael? Before we I should have also, and I don't have it handy here, but it's I believe it's cabrillomusictheater.com, but I'll find it sometime
for tickets,
the end of the hour for Cabrillo Music Theater, but find it online on that interweb we talked about earlier.
Yes, our guest, so...
there you
specifically
go.
Brought up to me, actually. All right. So we are moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest's favorite credit includes Chicago, where she played Mama Morton, the nurse in Romeo and Juliet, and the 30th anniversary tour of Annie in the role of Miss Hannigan. She reprises her take on that classical musical theater villain on stage at the Pantages now through November 1st. Please welcome Lynn Andrews. Yeah, baby.
That is so rad.
You are so rad.
Thank you.
You are so rad.
Okay, so you said earlier you've done this. So I see here the 30th anniversary you did. You've been on the 13 months now doing this. And how do you just, I mean, and Hannigan is just the great.
Hannigan the Great.
The great theater scenery chewing villains of all time. Are you still having as much of a ball with it as you did earlier? It's hard, I'm sure for any performer doing anything for a long time, you got to find ways to make it new for yourself. How do you do that?
Well, there's enough material that you can constantly be working on it. Mm-hmm. I was just saying to someone the other night, there was one line I have, it's a joke, that, I had this joke with the people in the orchestra that it never got a laugh, and we all thought it was really funny how it never got a laugh, and then somewhere around performance 800 it sort of started to get a laugh, and now it solidly works, but that's what I've been thinking about the last couple hundred performances.
Do you find, because I toured with a one person show for a long time, and I find that, don't you find it amazing how different cities react to the same joke or the same song? It's there's not, I mean, especially with scored songs, if you're doing the song right and you're really selling it, how much can that vary that the reaction would vary so much from different people? I find that fascinating.
It's remarkable the way audiences react. I mean, in Los Angeles, they're loud and they're rowdy and we love it. Yeah. But there's some, in San Francisco, they were very reserved. They
really?
Went crazy at curtain call, but during the numbers, they were just polite little, golf claps. We're like, okay, are you guys into this or not? I don't know. Yeah. But certain jokes, I mean, we make fun of New Jersey quite a bit. And there are some states, when we played Philadelphia, they loved the New Jersey.
The slamming of Jersey.
Yeah. They loved it.
Yeah.
But some states are like, huh? Who cares?
You're from Denver, are you?
Yeah, I'm from Denver.
How did it? You played it there, right?
Oh yeah, it was great. All I could hear was my screaming high school friends.
God bless.
They were extra loud.
Yeah. But if only they were in the theater, that would have been better.
I know. If only they could have afforded tickets.
That's the thing about Los Angeles audiences. You get both. You get all or nothing. Because it's something like Pantages where the beautiful contagion of energy in a room that size and something like Annie that is so, so joyous. And then you get, in the smaller theaters, you get a lot of the L.A. I'm too cool for school thing. Like I did Tony and Tina's Wedding, the original Chicago production of it after it left New York, the first thing in Chicago. And Chicago ripped it up and then brought the same thing out here and it was like crickets. Ran 18 years in Chicago and 6 weeks in L.A. So it's nice to hear that you're experiencing the positive side of the L.A. theater community.
Well, I sort of get the feeling that it's kind of a relief for people to be able to bring their kids to something that they're enjoying and the kids are enjoying.
Right.
And they're enjoying it on the same level.
Yeah.
I mean, there are jokes that the kids don't get, but I mean... The love story between Daddy Warbucks and Annie. Everyone in the audience is comprehending that, regardless of their age, because they're with their parents and they're like, "Oh, I understand what that feels like."
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I must say that your cohort in crime, Garrett Deegan, who plays Rooster Hannigan, and also
my buona,
Lucy Werner, who plays Lily, are fantastic. They are must be so much fun to work with.
Oh, I love them. I'm obsessed with them.
They really, you know, I've seen so many productions of this, certainly, and I've directed it twice. And you, really, where does this old soul come from in you? Because your understanding of what you're doing up there, really, I'm saying, giving you a compliment here, because it's you don't see this very often in theater coming from a young woman such as yourself.
I have no idea. I don't know.
Just something that's innate.
I guess so. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's because my parents are older. My father was born in 1925, mm-hmm. and we were raised on different kinds of music than I think the other kids in my age group. But I have no idea. I don't know what's happening.
I think it's because you despise children.
I think it's because I'm hateful and I'm drunk right now.
Yeah. Stop throwing olives on the console. Appreciate that.
Spitting them everywhere.
But it's interesting because the thing is, I mean, and obviously it's the stage show and, you know, you're playing a character and, the promo photos that I was sent, I came into the lobby here and walked in and you had your sunglasses on and everything. I was like, you did not look like the same person at all.
Oh, good.
Really good.
What? She didn't look like a haggard old woman?
I didn't look like a hag. Cool.
I put your performance right up there with Dorothy Loudon and Carol Burnett.
Oh, my God.
And I do. Oh, I think of anybody that I have seen.
And it's Carol Burnett in Moon Over Buffalo, but that's not the point.
I heard a rumor that she saw the show.
Oh, really?
I heard a rumor that she saw the show incognito.
Really?
So, someone should find that out.
Oh, interesting.
Well, she's right here, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
This is our life. Lynn Andrews. Benny would know that.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah.
Let's call him.
Let's call him at his office. Yeah.
So, the other thing I noticed that...
Oh, Michaelia, did you hear that? Oh, yeah. Fantastic. So, rumor kind of confirmed.
We were hoping to get Dick. I just did Mary Poppins out at Cabrillo, and we were hoping to get Dick Van Dyke for that, and then he couldn't make it last minute, but that would have been a wonderful
thing. Yeah. See them.
Once again, a character so identified with this. And you... you have a website that I went to, and you have to tell me about this trio of
girl group.
Yeah, it just looks so fun and unusual, and what the hybrid of styles that you mentioned on the If Nixon, Nixon and Elvis, or
so it's me and two girls I met doing a show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. It was a very depressing musical about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire.
Oh,
and
wow.
We all connected very deeply with the subject matter, but we also are three fun, loving idiots.
It was a musical about the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow,
it was pretty heavy.
Hardly happy
at all. It was pretty heavy, you guys.
For those of our listeners that don't know, the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire was the great tragedy that basically defines all fire exit codes of today, because absolutely everything that could have gone wrong went wrong, and hundreds of women were killed when a factory burned in the East Village.
Yeah, and they were mostly teenage girls, and they were all immigrants, and it was just the biggest mess and tragedy you could think of. Yeah. But we were there, and the three of us... just started singing together, and I have a deep voice, and my friend Savannah, who's actually on Broadway right now in Amazing Grace, she's a soprano, and my friend Nicole Weiss, she is perfect middle, and we just started singing together, and we all discovered that this is something we want to do, and I write songs all the time, and the hybrid of styles is we say if Hank Williams and the Andrews Sisters and Beyonce had a slumber party, that's what would happen. Because we write these songs and we're like, oh yeah, this is deep, and then we just start riffing and we're like, fine.
No, it just was it was very intriguing, and I always like to point out things that the performers that we see, the other things that they do, because it's not just about the we follow them for their career.
Absolutely.
And all the different
things. And you're a pretty darn good dancer too, I must say.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I liked it all.
I don't know if we've thrown this information out here, but let's do it now so we can tuck it in a couple of times before the end of the hour.
Yes.
For tickets to Annie, you want to visit HollywoodPantages.com or Ticketmaster.com, or you can call 800-982-2787. That's 800-982-2787. And, of course, the Hollywood Pantages box office is right there at the theater, 6233 Hollywood Boulevard. And one of the things I always tell people, especially about the Pantages there, you can take the metro to
it.
Don't deal with parking there. The metro station is directly across the street. That place, right, that hotel makes a great martini. If you have a co-signer, you can go and enjoy one over there because they're a little on the pricey side. But that's the W, but that Daphne's, is that the other place?
Yes, well, that's Daphne's connected. It's kind of the restaurant.
But Daphne's
the
a little cheaper than doing the lobby of the of the thing. Well, she would know.
Just go backstage and get some of Lynn's stash.
There you go.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And she's usually in the alley right up until 7:59.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Do either
and
of
the
you
show, have, by the way, is at the Pantages through November 1st. So you have some time to see it, but not a lot of time.
Yes.
So
make or you sure can just you go right next door to the Frolic Room and get a bartender
nice
with fresh stitches in their hair.
So,
wow.
So, it's like my id has jumped out and is talking.
I know.
It's fantastic. I've been on tour for 13 months and I've really restrained myself.
Oh.
But, you're like a breath of fresh air.
That's why you're working and I'm not. I'm just here every Thursday. You know how hard it is to fill the other 6 days? Anyway, do either of you have websites and things that you can tell our listeners about to visit to follow you?
Follow me, follow me, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at fake Lynn Andrews. It's not the real Lynn Andrews. It's the fake Lynn Andrews.
Oh.
And lynn-andrews.squarespace.com. It's terrible. It's a terrible name. But lynn-andrews at .squarespace.com.
You could probably say that four more times and they still won't. All right.
Yeah.
And Gilgamesh, what about you?
Mine is, excuse me, my website is www.gilgameshtaggart.com. I know it's very confusing, but you should be able to find it. If you can spell it correctly, that's the issue. Same thing, my Instagram is Gilgamesh Taggart. My Twitter is at GA Taggart. Please follow, make comments, send weird pictures, whatever.
Okay. And also you can learn all about them and see their pictures and all of that at the very well thought out webpage that they have for this show. It's kind of nice when they have all the people, the whole cast broken up and you can see them individually, not just like a list of names.
Right.
I always like that when they do that for sure.
It's like they paid for it.
Yeah.
You're talking about the national tour website.
Yeah.
Indeed.
All right, it's that time, Michael. The last 5 minutes.
Yeah. Did you prep our guests?
I did.
Okay,
I did.
Good.
I told them all about it before we went on the air. This is the this is where you share a tale of woe, a theatrical mishap, something that went funny or south, where there was potential injury or something, just a funny thing that went wrong. Not
and
necessarily.
Potential injury is always funny.
Yes, it always is. Yeah. Whichever one of you want to start, who has it?
I'll start. Okay, so I did a play, Death Takes a Holiday, and the whole premise was that it was supposed to look like a black and white movie. So we did all the makeup. We looked, you know, it looked great. It looked, you know, everything's black and white, and I'm in this beautiful white dress, and you know where this is going.
Oh,
and
no.
I was not prepared.
Oh, no.
It was young, and it was my time of the month. And
oh,
I was
no.
sitting, and someone was like, did you sit in red paint?
Oh, no.
But there's no red paint in the, oh, my God.
Oh.
And then, like, you know, but the show's going on, so there's no stopping.
Oh.
That.
Wow.
So,
oh, I'm mortified for you.
Wow.
It still hurts. It's like I'm actually feeling pain.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm having phantom vagina pains right now. Oh, poor
thing.
Can
we give Miss Andrews a fresh martini?
Oh, really?
I know. I need another.
Oh,
Michaela.
Dignity takes a holiday.
Wow. Dignity takes a holiday.
Careful now. She's trying to swallow.
Oh, my goodness.
Damn you.
You got both of us. Well done.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Okay. Gilgamesh, you got a tough act to follow.
Well, no, it actually keys in because they both involve
blood.
You got
your period?
Yes. I was a young girl.
I was doing sweet then they charity.
Then they dumped a bucket of blood on me at the prom.
I went insane, and everyone in my high school was dead. I was doing a production of Kiss Me, Kate, playing Fred Petruchio at the beginning, and you walk out, and the orchestra is playing, and instead of being a big finish, they just kind of peter out, and you say, all right, cut these measures, and then turn around and clap your hands, and everybody's like listening because you're seeing backstage, and I wasn't watching where I was walking. And I stepped right off into the pit.
Oh, wow.
On my way down, trying to catch myself, landed on my face, went into the pit, kicked out a flautist front teeth.
Oh, my Lord.
Came running back up. Our onstage, quote, stage manager, was standing there doing the most cartoon running in place, just kind of like not knowing what to do. The real stage manager, Kelsey, came out, and she was just like, come here, grab my head, whipped it back, nailed me with a couple of cotton balls, and said, can you go on? Yes. And so we did the show, and I just progressively looked more like a raccoon as the show went on.
Oh my God.
It was bad. And then I was put on hiatus so that I could
Kicked out a flautist front yeah. teeth was actually a rock band I performed.
It should be, if not.
Flautists.
Oh, man. I took a fall. It was my own stupidity. That's one thing. But to injure another party, especially one with such a strong union that can sue.
Wow.
And you that know, isn't I, even hardcore. Like, I, you kicked out someone's teeth, but it wasn't even rat. Like,
no, it wasn't like I went
in a bar fight.
I didn't put her in a curb stomp, or I just fell.
The problem was the flautist was on her period.
And it all comes full circle.
And scene. Okay.
Good work, everybody. See you next week.
Okay. Really great work. Appreciate having you.
I think those are also in the top of our
many right up hundreds there. The winner is still the theme park costume with the live rat stuck in it.
Oh my
that
God!
Was,
yes.
That
oh,
was the
oh my
one.
God!
Oh,
no.
Yes, there was that. Yes, there was that.
That's the high water mark for worst thing to happen on stage. The guy inflating the theme park costume backstage because he couldn't get through the doorways, and then walking on stage and a live rat.
Well, of course it's going to win. Rabies is always funny.
What a joy having both of you here. This was
absolutely
a hoot. It really was.
Gilgamesh,
thank you so much.
And
just
Lynn.
Flew by. And also, thank you, Michaela, for joining us.
Michaela. Big ups to Michaela.
And as a quick reminder, HollywoodPantages.com or Ticketmaster.com only through
November 1st.
November 1st. Yep. So get tickets to see this amazing piece. And also try to fit in Damn Yankees at Cabrillo Music Theater.
And The Sound of Music at the Amundsen Theater through the 31st.
Yes. Thank you both.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Paul. See you on the radio.
See you next week.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.